Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I welcome Gregory Copley, the editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, with his staff publishing on Nigeria. The date, May 21st, 2021. A plane crash at the Kaduna of the Nigerian Air Force Textron Beechcraft B300 King Air 350i. The crash on May 21st turns the story of Nigeria into perhaps a solution into more question marks. Gregory, I begin by immediately asking, this plane crash that killed the Army Chief of Staff, newly appointed Lieutenant General Ibrahim Atahiru, and 10 other officers, his staff, including the aircrew, suggests that it might not have been an accident. What do we know? Good evening to you.
John, the reports or the if you like, conspiracy theories about the crash are just that. They're conspiracy theories. I think there's every reason to believe that the aircraft crashed due to, shall we say, normal circumstances, in this case, weather. And there was very bad weather in the Kaduna area. Kaduna is in central northern Nigeria. Kaduna is the capital of the north, they say, of Nigeria, and it's about 120 miles or so north of Abuja, the capital. So the aircraft was heading to the Nigerian Air Force base at Kaduna to take the Army Chief of Staff to a passing out parade for young Army Armed Forces cadets. It was going to the Air Force base. The weather was so bad, it was diverted to Kaduna International Airport, and I planned into that. It's a much bigger airport than the Air Force base, so they presumably thought they'd have a little more latitude in landing. However, the aircraft crashed on approach. So that was pretty...
The death of the Army Chief of Staff reminds all of us that he was only recently appointed, late January of this year, by the president, President Buhari, because of his unhappiness with the previous leadership. What is it that President Buhari wanted the new staff to do that now the successors must do?
Well, it wasn't that President Buhari was unhappy with the three service chief and the chief of the defense force who were all replaced on January the 26th. In fact, he was very happy with them because they did his bidding and they were entirely corrupt, and the war was going very badly, but a lot of people, including all the generals, were getting very rich. So there was massive pressure, both internationally and domestically, to change the armed forces chiefs, make them more responsible. So the four corrupt officers were forcibly retired, and President Buhari, after almost 5 years of these guys in doing his bidding, replaced them with a new team, and General Ibrahim Atahiru was one of those, and he was regarded as having a mandate to stop the corruption, improve the combat effectiveness of the forces in the, particularly in the northeast, where Boko Haram and the Islamic State of the West Africa province are based and are operating. So he was making headway there. He was getting on with it. He was seen as a competent and honest officer, as were the rest of the team. The interesting thing about his replacement, though, is that his replacement is also a competent general and one who I think will do a good job. General was jumped up over 180 other senior officers to take the appointment. This is Major General Yahaya. General Yahaya, is now promoted to Lieutenant General as Chief of the Army. But that means that all of the officers who were senior to him from their graduating courses all now have to retire. So they go. And that actually takes 180 very, very competent officers out of the fight, just at a time when you need experience and leadership and capability. So, and this has happened periodically. And this is a result of the old British Army tradition, whereas if you get promoted to command above your classmates or classmates ahead of you from your graduating days in the military academy, then they have to retire. The idea is that you don't want someone who you are accustomed to calling sir and saluting is now answering to you, and it might cause some embarrassment or cause some, if you like, deference, which to juniors from the seniors. So basically that's why that process is kept in place. And of course, Nigeria is one of those countries where there is great deference to seniority and great deference to age. So if you're promoted above someone who you've traditionally been deferential to, then it makes it awkward. So you now have to waste 180 officers. This has happened time and again, with the result that Nigeria, when it's going through these crises, as it is with security challenges all over the north, not just the northeast, and in the Niger Delta, is now losing these very experienced officers. So they're going to have to rebuild. And not only do you lose those senior officers, you have to then shuffle people to fill their positions. So you're reshuffling the whole command structure literally less than 6 months after it was massively disrupted before.
A few dates that make march us to where we are today. 2003, 2004, Boko Haram first becomes a threat in the region. 2015, President Goodluck Jonathan steps aside for President Muhammadu Buhari, now present. Buhari, you report, was a northerner and former military officer. So from 2015 until now, I believe you've reported to me over time that the army has failed to dislodge Boko Haram in the north, and that failure is part of the story of the whole of the country, divided between powerful presences, usually very rich, but also warlord presidences. What is the possibility now with the new chief of staff? Is there any reason to believe that the conditions have changed for Nigeria?
Well, not from the leadership level in terms of political leadership under General Buhari or President Buhari. He came in with the promise that as a northerner, he would understand northern problems and deal with Boko Haram. In fact, he just allowed corruption to run rampant, and everyone was making money out of the war. There was money being stolen literally from the food allowances for the troops, which was not a very great food allowance in the first place. But when you had people siphoning off funds from that, siphoning off money from a defense procurement, selling off weapons from the arsenals of the armed forces to Boko Haram and Islamic State West Africa, you start to see how it became a war that you couldn't win. Morale was going down, plummeting in the battlefield areas in the three northeastern states. So basically, it couldn't have got much worse. Now, the reality was that nobody has really managed this terribly well since the initial outbreak of 2003-2004, when the then National Security Advisor, later Defense Minister, Lieutenant General Ali Mohammed, himself a former chief of army staff, he got on top of this very, very quickly with the state security services, and Boko Haram was contained and was no longer a threat. Essentially, when President Goodluck Jonathan, who was a Christian from the south down in the Niger Delta, when he came into office, he said, well, these northerners are not of concern. This is my base is in the south. By the way, the south is different from the south in Nigeria. And he basically allowed Boko Haram to reignite, if you like, because it made the North look bad, and the North was, for him, it's his political rival area. So that basically was unfortunate, and that's when a lot of the corruption began in the armed forces, because the armed forces had not traditionally been the center of corruption in Nigeria. It only became so under Goodluck Jonathan, and then expanded even more under President Buhari.
because we're in a place now in 2021 where Boko Haram is not the only story in Nigeria, I want to grow this story as you do for your presentation. Boko Haram receives and participates in smuggling, as I understand it, of weapons all through Central Africa, weapons from Libya, weapons from Somalia. But, Gregory, here's the twist. What does Turkey have to do with this? How did the Turkish state security get involved in Central Africa?
Well, that's a very, very interesting situation. Turkey's traditionally had an interest in Africa from Ottoman times, particularly in the Horn of Africa and in North Africa. And, of course, North Africa was and including Egypt, was heavily under Ottoman control for many years. So the present government, Turkish government of President Erdogan, feels that it needs to project back into Africa, needs to oppose Egypt, and, of course, it greatly resents the present Egyptian leadership, which replaced the Muslim Brotherhood leadership. And the Muslim Brotherhood is the party of President Erdogan of Turkey. It is a Muslim Brotherhood party. So you've got the Obama administration worked with Turkey and Qatar to inject a lot of Muslim Brotherhood-related and Islamist-related fighters into Libya during in 2011 in particular, basically pushing the moderate anti-Gaddafi opposition aside and creating the civil war, which continues today. So, and today, by the way, Turkey has a dominant position within the new interim government in Libya. It's reasserting itself in Somalia, in Ethiopia, and in Sudan. Where again, Sudan, it was dislodged with the overthrow of the President Bashir a couple of years ago. So Turkey is trying to get back in. It's also going in not just through North Africa, but also by funding madrasa schools, Muslim schools in Ethiopia. And there are a lot of Turkish so-called charities set up, which are funneling money into the radical Islamist groups in Nigeria, and they were caught sending in weapons. I'd long warned the Nigerian government that their good friends in Turkey were not their good friends and that they were shipping weapons in. And finally, the Nigerian customs uncovered a huge amount of small arms coming in from Turkey. That was some years ago, but they continue to do it. And so the Turkish Muslim Brotherhood sort of network through Libya and through Sudan in particular has been the primary conduit of weapons and fighters down in through Chad and into northern Nigeria. So this is partly why the war with Boko Haram and its splinter group, the Islamic State West Africa province, have gone across the borders into Cameroon, into Chad, Niger, and the like. And this is not unrelated to the conflict in Chad, which resulted in the death of President Idriss Deby in April. About April 20th, he was killed trying to negotiate with rebels who'd come down from Libya. So you've got a lot of these connections underway. You can't look at the Nigerian Northeast Boko Haram uprising as though it were isolated. In fact, it's Boko Haram and Islamic State West Africa have been so successful that they gave renewed credibility to Al-Qaeda, which was an original affiliate of Boko Haram, and ISIS in the Iraq-Syria area, so that Islamic State and Al-Qaeda continue to make progress in Africa, in Nigeria, Niger, and the like.
I'm speaking with Gregory Copley, Defense and Foreign Affairs publisher and editor. We're talking about the enormous challenge of Nigeria. Why Gregory wants to take us into this is because he has recommendations. And when we come back, what is to be done? Remember now, a plane crash wipes out the general staff of the newly appointed general in charge of the army for a solution, or at least a counteroffensive, in the north of Nigeria that doesn't suit the president but certainly suits the people of Nigeria. Are Nigerian armed forces capable of launching an offensive against ISIS, Al-Qaeda, Boko Haram, and Turkish smugglers? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
There's a time and a place for Filet-O-Fish, but breakfast is for sausage biscuits. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.